Welcome back to DDA's Encouraging Abilities podcast. I'm your host, DDA Communications Manager Evan Kelly. Now with me today is a friend of the association, Mr. Elliot Headley. Elliot is an extremely creative self-advocate who creates music and films, which we're going to talk heavily about. Having studied film at Capilano University, he uses his craft and abilities as a tool for advocacy. Navigating life with cerebral palsy, he dedicates himself to uplifting the voices of individuals with disabilities. His commitment extends beyond the screen. He actively participates as a peer mentor in the Possibilities Social Media Fellowship. Now, Possibilities is another organization here in the Lower Mainland that supports people with disabilities. He operates his YouTube channel, Red Fighter Productions 96, where he showcases some of his advocacy work and music. So, Elliot, happy to have you here today.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so, Elliot, tell me a little bit more about yourself in terms of the music and film and stuff.
Film came like when I was a kid because my parents both are in the film industry. So,
oh, is that right?
Yeah, so it's a whole big family thing.
Oh, wow. So what did your parents do in the film industry here? Was it here?
Yeah, and here, yeah. Well, originally my mom was from London, so she did costume theater, like make costumes for theater originally. And then she transitioned to like costumes for film. And my dad does props, same as my brother. So they both make props, like guns, knives, etc. So
that is so your brother does props as well.
Yeah,
that's really, you're right. That really is a family affair. Is it just you and your brother? Yeah.
I have a few more brothers, but they don't do the same thing as me and my brother. So,
so you have a few more brothers. How many kids are in your family?
So there's me, Jack, Eden, and Levi. So about four of us.
Cool.
So yeah, it's two different families, but yeah.
But that's interesting that you're all involved in that. That must make it fairly easy for your mom and dad. Did they work together? I don't know if they're retired now, but do they work together on films and stuff?
They used to together. Yeah. The last thing my dad did was Godzilla, and now my mom is a art therapist, so she is trained to do therapy for people.
With art. Oh, wow. Is that for physical disabilities or any sort of range of disabilities?
Well, it's for people with disabilities and non-disabilities.
Okay.
Yeah. She's going to get her master's in July, I presume.
Oh, in July. Oh, wow. Still working on it. That's amazing.
Yeah. Wow.
So anyway, we got distracted talking about your parents there. Let's talk about you again. You've grown up with cerebral palsy your entire life. Mm-hmm. How was that for you?
At first it was tricky because people didn't understand me, and it cerebral palsy affects the speech and physical disabilities. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I did go to like speech therapy for that, and also like thanks to my mom again. Like she got me a game called Rock Band. I think you heard about it before.
Of course. Yeah.
So doctor said, "Oh, you're not gonna be able to play guitar or do anything with your left hand." So I started playing like Rock Band with my left hand, like. It's okay, not doing anything big, but then over time, it was from like stuck in this one position to I can actually play notes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, of course you can play notes. I've got video of you playing in a bass guitar, so we'll get more into that in a bit later.
Yeah.
And so it's your musical aspirations started on Rock Band. That's kind of cool.
Yeah. I think people nowadays ask, like, what is Rock Band? I'm like, it's a 2000s thing.
That was after my time, I'm afraid. You see, one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you, because I myself am a musician. I've been playing drums for 40 years, maybe even longer. I'm not even sure. And so you and I definitely have that connection. And so you fast forward from Rock Band. Did you, before going to university or anything else, did you transition into an actual instrument? And I don't mean to offend people who use Rock Band, but it is not an instrument.
So I first started on guitar. So I was guitar, then halfway in my, say, halfway in high school, I transitioned to bass because I went to Sam McLaughlin School of Music.
Oh, yeah? Wow.
Yeah. So that helped train, like, local East Van artists like myself to get more trained in the arts.
So what was it like going to the Sarah McLaughlin School of Music?
It was amazing. It was like meeting connections and people know each other because all from the East Side.
And how big of a school is that? I'm not even sure about that.
It's not big as a football field, but I would say maybe about three houses big.
Three houses.
If you,
and yeah. What is the thrust of that school? I mean, you're taking guitar, so what? Yeah. What do they just offer? A whole bunch of different musicians? Do they offer composition? Yeah. Like, what the kind of thing?
They do like vocals. They do drums. There's drums out there. Mm-hmm. Singing, songwriting, bass, etc. And DJing too. If you want to be a DJ.
DJ. Hmm. Yeah, that's for another conversation. And so from there, you went to Capilano University?
Yeah. I originally went there 2016, so that's pre-COVID years. And I was the only guy with cerebral palsy in the group, so it's like, it's kind of like awkward moments. So what do you have? Like, what's your story? I said, okay, here's my whole backstory to my classmates. They said, oh, yeah, you have some, excuse my language, right? You have some very dark shit.
In terms of going to the, you know, either Sarah McLaughlin School or even Capilano University again, you know, going to these schools as a person with a disability, how did you feel like inclusion was? How did you feel? Did you feel accepted?
Yes. Like, Sam Cochran, let's go do that one first. He had like a prize stuff, I guess, a normal person. And for me, because usually with a guitarist, you have to use all your fingers, like, on your left hand or your right hand. But for me, I only can use three fingers.
Okay.
So I make my own unique style of playing.
And that shows some extreme adaptation. Like that wouldn't be an easy thing to do for anybody.
No. Even for you, who's a drummer.
Oh, it's impossible for me as a drummer. I have never picked up a guitar really in my life, but. So you got through that transition working with three working fingers, and how did that change your approach to guitar and songwriting or just playing?
For me, so if you give me a music sheet, I won't even cannot read music sheets. I just like make things up, like as any artist, right? They make art from anywhere. So, if you gave me MC Sheets, I would be like, I can't read this, but I make lyrics. That's what I do, mostly.
Yeah.
That is a good bunch of my years doing music. Then, for Tapu, I want to, like, follow my footsteps in my family. But I know being a guy with a disability is a tricky thing in the film industry. So
Now you went to Capilano University for film, correct?
Yeah, for film. Then I transitioned to documentary after like halfway points because I failed. Not failed. I didn't graduate from motion picture, but they asked me, do you want to do documentary? I said, yeah. So I went for another year. So I graduated from that.
And so you finished, you've got your degree and everything like that?
I got a certificate.
Oh, okay.
Saying I'm a documentary filmmaker.
Oh, I gotcha, okay. Mm-hmm. And I was gonna, one of my questions is, what got you into film? Well, your parents, probably. Are you able to sort of, obviously you're passionate about music, because we can even, mm-hmm. we're gonna jump a little bit more into that.
Yeah, of course.
So how do you, these are two passions of yours, filmmaking and music writing. Do you bridge those two, or do you keep them kind of separate?
Right now, I own a project. It's for people with disabilities, and it's about artists who have disabilities and do art. And I was asked some possibilities to do directing, and I said, do you want me to do some music? Just maybe in the background. Mm-hmm. I said, yeah, that'd be awesome. So I'm making some music for them and directing the project.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Still don't have a working title yet, but...
And that's for doing some background music on some... Was it a documentary or something?
Yeah, documentary, yeah.
Okay.
And
so tell, the band Lakewood Gray, can you tell me a little bit about that?
So... During COVID, everyone's super isolated and they're bored out of their minds.
Yep.
I stopped playing music not every day, just every few days. And then I called out some of my old high school mates from back in the day and hey, do you want to make a band? Mm-hmm. So we made an online band for a few years and I started writing this song, and so it's just me, Andy, and Madeline, and then during COVID, this is so risky, but you make a music video during COVID, that was the weirdest time.
It was outside, so I think it was a bit safer.
Yeah.
Or most of it was, I think.
Yeah.
And now, just for those listening, that you can see this video they made with the band Lakewood Gray. It's on his YouTube channel. Again, that's Red Fighter Productions 96. That would be the search term. So, you've created this band during COVID, and you've got this one song. Is there more music we're waiting for?
Andy is someone else, and I wish he is. And Madeline is doing her own solo art right now, so it's hard to keep track of those two. I want to do more, it's just they're so hard to get hold of sometimes.
Oh, I feel that pain when it comes to putting bands together and keeping things together and keeping the music flowing. It's not an easy thing to do. Lakewood Gray, is there a meaning in that name?
So Lakewood is a street name nearby my house.
Okay.
So it's, and gray is the English term for gray, so.
So gray means gray.
yeah. So people who are uneducated about, G-R-E-Y, gray, is the English way, but American way is with the A in it.
Right. I gotcha.
Yes. So we're trying to have, folky, English style of playing, but, yeah.
Now, did you write the song?
Yeah, I did. Me and I guess I'm having Madeline because she's awesome at writing music notes, and I'm good at writing lyrics.
Nice. Oh, so you wrote all the lyrics to the song.
Hmm.
And what's it about? Let's go deep.
Everyone during COVID time, they social distancing. Social distancing, mm-hmm. and can't see each other.
Yep.
I thought about that, I want to see that person. How does it feel to be that far away from the person you can't see?
Mm-hmm.
I guess you, as a person who's stuck in a house too, or apartment, have that feeling you want to see a friend or a family member. it's kind of, yeah, that's the basic story of that person. Or persons who want, yeah, that's basically the story.
And I should mention that it's, the song is called Mirror, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and the music video is so great. There was a great team who helped me film this.
And yeah. So where did you record the music?
So it was mostly on our computers.
Okay.
It wasn't like a professional setting.
Well, it sounds pretty good. It sounds pretty true to me, and I've been in music for a long time, so.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, let's record this on our computers. I was a little sketchy about it first because I'm like, I'm going to sound like very bad because sometimes audio doesn't sound good on computers.
No, definitely not. It's nice to have big padded rooms and lots of natural reverb, right?
Yeah, but it's amazing how it turned out, just from our computers. And we're just like three different places.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is amazing. It's like, you know, I've been in, like I said, I've been in music for a long time. I've you know, was making music and recording in studios before the advent of the real sort of digital home studio started making its way into things. And it's there's so much you can do. Just on your own. I mean, look, we're doing this podcast on this machine that's fits into the palm of my hand, you know, and some of them you can even do it on your phone. So it's amazing that we can even produce kind of the things we do with what seems like limited resources, but they're not. You can actually produce something quite good.
Yeah.
And so that goes into my next question. You know, you're a lyric writer. So where do you find your inspiration on topics to write about?
It could be, for example, I wrote a song. It's not like officially like in the works, but it's just like when I am emotional sometimes, I just write lyrics down.
Mm-hmm.
Like I wrote a song about pain because I was like in that moment that I felt pain.
Mm-hmm.
Like different things happen to me sometimes.
Sure, you're a human being.
Yeah, we're all human beings.
Do you use the music as part of your advocacy work, or does that not play into it as so much?
That's a good question. Music comes and goes when people need me, like, for what possibilities or something. It's like, yeah, we need some music. No, we don't. I'm like, music is a part of my life, like, and I can tell it's a part of your life too.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when you first pick up a guitar or pick up a drumstick, you're like, it's a part of you. You can't escape it.
I know that feeling well, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
No, but. Sorry, keep going.
No, you go first.
I was going to go back into the video. It's actually kind of a nice self-produced work. Did you have to spend a lot of money on it? And did you direct it as well?
I directed it. Yes, I did. And, produced and, it, and was in it, and directed it.
And what did you shoot it on?
It was usually just going to be 180p, for people who don't understand what that is, it's like per second, like how much frames per second.
Yeah.
And instead I changed it to 4K, so it's much more crispier.
Mm-hmm.
For camera-wise, it was like my friend's camera. I don't know what type of camera it was at the time, because I was like, oh, here's all nice equipment. Let's use his equipment.
When in doubt, use someone else's equipment in case it breaks.
Yeah.
And so did you edit it as well?
To be fair, I'm terrible at editing. I just hire one of my friends to do it.
Yeah, that always helps too, right? I'm not a great editor either, but I try. And did it, that was all done basically for free? You didn't have to spend any money on it?
Nope, not a penny. I basically paid everyone with beers and pizza.
Beer and pizza is a good motivator.
Yeah.
Okay, so I want to head back into film.
Mm-hmm.
You've made a short documentary called "Don't Diss My Disability." Why did you make Why did you make that?
To be honest, like I feel like people with disabilities don't get that much attention in the workforce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we know that.
And usually they're like, "Oh, they're like maybe in the corner, just like, oh yeah, just know that person who has like autism or cerebral palsy or etc." But I feel they need to have a voice, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
When you watch this film, how do you feel about that?
How do I? Are you asking me how I feel about it?
Yeah, when you watch this.
Well, yeah, it's like you feel like these people want to be heard and seen and taken seriously.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the people you use in that film they're not just physical disabilities, like someone with cerebral palsy might experience, but people with mm-hmm. developmental disabilities as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's a nice little piece that really gets the point across. Now, for those who don't know, "Don't Diss My Disability" was showcased at the 2020 Beyond the Curve International Film Festival in Paris, where it was listed as a finalist in the best documentary category. So how did that make you feel? It doesn't sound like you won the award, but even being nominated for something like that seems pretty cool.
Yeah, well, so basically, it was by chance. So basically, I had $100 as a budget, and I put my film in a couple of different, festivals.
Mm-hmm.
And, after that one, as the first one, I started getting tons of attention. Like, people were asking questions about the documentary and why you chose 4 people, not 2. I'm like, well, I think you could have multiple personalities and multiple different views, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. And why wouldn't you? I mean, to me, it seems like you could even make a longer form of that to really get that across. But why did you choose a Paris film festival?
So as I said before, my mom is from England. I like Europe a lot, so I just put Paris because I just roll a dice see if they're going to like it or not. So they liked it.
Mm-hmm.
I played some in Ireland, England, Paris. Yeah, a couple of different places.
Nice. And so when you got the nomination for that, how did you feel about that?
I was surprised, to be honest. Someone from Canada and Paris, I'm like, oh, they just go like past the office as nothing, just a okay film, but no. Being a finalist is a big thing.
Yeah, absolutely it is. I don't know if you're aware, because I know you're friends with David, our filmmaker.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen the documentary he put together for DDA, Doing the Impossible, the story of the Developmental Disabilities Association?
He told me about it over coffee one time.
Yeah. Yeah, and it won 3 Leo Awards last year, BC Leo Awards, and was nominated for a couple of others, and nominated at the Yorkton Film Fest, which is pretty big here in Canada. So it's nice to get those recognitions, isn't it?
Yeah. I went to work with him again to work on another project I'm thinking about.
On the bigger picture, do you think Hollywood is getting better at representing people with disabilities, since we're talking about film?
Slowly and surely, yes. It took years for people in Hollywood to represent people of color too, right? Asians, blacks, so on, so on, so on. But also, I see there's some improvements, but it needs more time, I think.
Mm-hmm. Needs more representation, do you think?
Yeah. Because they only see us He's just a background actor or something. Yeah. I said, oh, he can do more than just be a background actor.
Yeah, you get the little token roles, right? And that's what you want to see less of and more actual parts.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that?
How do I feel about that? Yeah. I think representation is very, very important. When, you know, we're talking about inclusion and acceptance, I mean, Hollywood and media in general is supposed to be a reflection of society, right? And and where, like, in the latest stats reports from Stats Canada, 27% of people in Canada identify with having a disability. Whereas we're still, in terms of representation in Hollywood, I think it's somewhere below 3%.
So
I'm sort of pulling that number out of the air as something I've read fairly recently, but at the end of the day, media still isn't really a big reflection of what's going on in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe there's room for improvement, about 24% room improvement.
Yeah, like I read somewhere like back in the 1800s, just like. In the 18th century, like, they used to put people like me and the other people with disabilities in asylums.
Mm-hmm.
Because they felt like we were, like, we're cursed or possessed by the devil and stuff like
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that then they didn't understand what a disability was. So.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. Or just didn't have the supports or means to offer people a life outside of an asylum or some sort of thing.
Yeah, but now I think society is still learning about, like, disabilities in general.
Yeah, I mean, you live as someone with cerebral palsy and who identifies with that disability, the big question is are we doing better? Is Canada doing better? Is BC doing better? How are we doing in terms of acceptance?
I know the Prime Minister of Canada, but I say, I think we get there because people in Parliament and stuff like that are recognizing there are people with disabilities that should be, like, be there to help people.
Mm-hmm.
And not just put them on sidelines, like, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. They should to be... like, recognized for their achievements.
Absolutely. And the difference between, you know, not doing anything and being successful, and being successful, I mean, like, contributing to society like a typically developed person, is simply a matter of having the right supports in place.
Yes, of course. It's the same with anyone in communities. They're like, oh, yeah, we're going to have this one person and have the next person, have the next person. But it's not that easy. Each person is different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So how important is it for you to be doing this advocacy work?
It's important. Like, it's important since day one I was born, because I was born with a disability. It's not easy, but, like, everyone is born differently, and disability is a part of who I am, and part of my, like, a part of me.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And what can DDA be doing better to help the disability community to be accepted and represented?
That's a good question. I think there should have people offset me now, who's a filmmaker, but have people, like, who can clearly speak for themselves and show what DDA can do. In their own community.
And podcasts, interview musicians and filmmakers who are advocates.
One day I would actually like to, like, sit down and chat about stuff with you.
Well, this is one of many podcasts we can do, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm certainly open to that.
Yeah.
We can sit down and hash out some different angles of things. I think today was just a nice way to get to know you and understand what you're doing and what you're bringing to the community. And it's been great having you.
Yeah, thanks. And also, I want to put this out there too. I'm also currently writing a script for a other film that's down the pipeline, but hopefully I can get it done before August, September-ish, because it's a fantasy project.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So that's a screenplay you're working on. Is that for a feature-length movie?
A miniseries.
Miniseries, cool.
Yeah.
Then you get to go through pitching that with everybody, and
yeah,
that's another long process.
Yeah, well, I am very good to get people convincing.
Oh yeah, good. Yeah. So in terms of a fantasy series, what kind? Are we talking like Game of Thrones type thing, or something?
It's gonna be like dark fantasy. Basically, my pitch is like, what if we didn't have technology that I can find our family history, right?
Mm-hmm.
It'd be good to like actually find your family history in the books and stuff like that, right? The old days, mm-hmm. before we had a stuff. So I just wanted to like see that angle,
mm-hmm.
how people back then had to find about themselves.
Hmm. Sounds interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Keep a role for me. I don't act, but it'd be fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's interesting, right? But people like, let's say, policy or this business in general, like, I'm not really written down in history that much.
Mm-hmm. So this fantasy thing would be targeted around disabilities as well?
That's a good question. It's not targeted per se, it's just like the whole theme is history and family. So you don't know who has it this way back then, or
mm-hmm.
I'm basically like writing my own book, but you don't know what story I'm going to tell.
A miniseries, that's a lot of writing. So that's just a matter of sitting down and getting on your computer and getting it done. I applaud you for that effort, because that's not an easy thing to do.
No, it's not. Again, people are interested to like jump on board with me, so they're like, yes, we want to do this. I love having this chat with you.
No, this has been great. You have been listening to DDA's Encouraging Abilities podcast. My guest today has been disability advocate, musician, filmmaker, and now screenwriter Elliot Headley. Elliot, it's been a pleasure having you on today.
Hey, you too. Have a good day.
I'm your host, DDA Communications Manager Evan Kelly, and thanks for listening.